talked about.
You gotta put it in perspective.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please.
What are you, David Copper?
If you like humor, man, yes. Can I get a volunteer?
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
That's not brown rice. That's amazing. Fantastic. Fantastic. That's not brown rice. That's amazing. That's not brown rice. That's amazing.
I don't know about the lead singer. When they perform, he performs nude. Why would you want to see a guy nude? I don't know. Anyway, but he's nude. But everybody else is dressed.
And now.
Good morning.
And he made two perfectly pleasant words so irritating.
Our feature presentation.
Morning, everybody. It's a brand new Kevin and Bean show. It is Thursday, the 12th of June.
So, is it more Kevin's fault for wanting the Kings to win the Cup at home, thereby willing them to lose last night in New York? Or Muggs's fault?
Can I stop you right there? If I can just stop you right there. I'd just like to choose Muggs.
Muggs did wear the Jonathan Quick jersey, and as great as the goalie for the Kings has been in the playoffs, if you had to pin it on one person who made the loss happen last night, it would be Jonathan Quick for letting in two goals. Right?
I don't know. Both of them were deflected, I think. And when you get a deflected goal, there's pretty much nothing you can do about it.
Go with me here. Muggs was wearing a Quick jersey.
And the Kings lost.
Perfectly willing to blame Muggs, as you know.
Yeah, I think you should. Right. What was he saying, Lisa?
How they were going to win. That was it. It was done.
Yeah, he might have been the king of the sweep. That might have been Muggs. Muggs might have been the one to put the sweep curse on him.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, look, we just had that conversation the other day about the superstitions and how, you know, they work and how they help your team, and you got to do your part. And maybe, you know, doing your part is maybe Muggs needs to go the other way and not think about or even watch the games. Because when he gets involved, look what happens.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I was wearing the same exact jersey when they won the Cup in 2012.
Ooh, good point.
So, null and void.
Now what do we do?
Is that a question?
And I actually have a question for you, Kevin, because there are a lot of rules in hockey that I don't understand.
Yep.
I sure wouldn't want to be a referee in that game, I'll tell you that. That puck that kind of got lost in the Rangers' net with about a minute left, that pile up at the net, and then the puck kind of got lost and it got behind Lundqvist.
Yeah.
And then it was on the line. I mean, it was 1 inch from going in.
Yep.
Then one of the Rangers reaches down and pushes it back to the outside of the net with his hand.
Right.
Tell me about that. You're allowed to reach into the goal and use your hands if you're not a goalie?
You're allowed to do what they call a hand pass, which is to get the puck and push it with your hand in your defensive zone only. But mm-hmm. You can't close your hand on it. So it was sort of like a technicality. The first, he did it twice, and I think the first one was probably okay where he was.
It looked, they seemed to think it was legal. Yeah, he was trying to push
it under the goalie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the second
one. And then
he
put his hands under Lundqvist's butt, right?
Yeah, and you also can't have both of your hands on the ice, I don't think. I think that's part of the call. So mm-hmm. The second one probably was a penalty, but, you know, they showed us that 20 times in slow motion.
Right.
I don't know how a ref would ever make that call.
Yeah.
Right. Because you couldn't really see the puck, and it was kind of hard to see his hands, too. I mean, it was just such a mess down there.
And
such
the rule is, the rule is if the ref loses sight of the puck, he'll blow it dead. Like, that's how they do it. So it's not a matter of he's sure it's in or he's sure it's out. Just if he can't see it anymore, he has to blow the whistle.
And that's why the whistle was blown 20 seconds before that when there was that big pile-up right in front of. I mean, that last minute was just heart-stopping, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. The whole third period, I thought the Kings were destroying and no goals.
Yeah.
That was rough.
And the Rangers took no shots on goal.
Yeah,
they weren't even trying. They were just playing purely in the defensive mode. It took everything they had just to stop another goal from going in.
So if there's a way to lose but not lose any momentum, I think mm-hmm. the Kings did that.
I think so, too.
They totally dominated the game. They had a couple of bad luck, plays, which the Rangers had earlier in the season. It just happens to both teams. So I think they come back, and I think they're fine. They know they can
dominate.
I think
so, too. As long as Muggs stays out of it,
I agree. I think
LA Kings are going to be fine.
That's the fly in the ointment right there.
So Friday night, the Cup will be downstairs just waiting, waiting for the game to be over.
Hey, Kings fans, are you ready? Huh?
Will Ferrell.
Are you ready? I need to hear you. I need to hear you right now. Right now. Let's go. Go, Kings, go. Go, Kings, go. Go, Kings, go. I can't hear you. I'm losing my mind. You need to lose your minds. Let's go. Ah!
And by the way, please tell me you saw old man John McEnroe before the game.
Yes, I did.
No.
Lisa, there was a call, I think it was in the first game. I don't remember. It was one of the first two games.
Yeah.
And it was questionable. They could have called goaltender interference on us. And they brought in John McEnroe, who said at the beginning of the coverage that he doesn't know hockey. And he doesn't know the rules.
Okay.
But so they needed somebody to attack the refs and say that they made a bad call. So they bring in John McEnroe.
Because
that's what he's famous for.
He used to yell at refs when he played tennis.
Right.
It was so, and he didn't know anything about it, and he was getting the players' names wrong, and he was just, it was pathetic.
So it was outstanding coverage.
It really was pathetic. I just thought, there are 200,000 people probably who could have made the case that maybe that's a penalty. He's not one of them.
Right.
It was just absurd. It was so ridiculous. It took me like, I don't know, 45 seconds just going, are they talking to John McEnroe about a play earlier in the series? Is that happening?
And it did they see him in the stands or something?
I really don't know. I heard him on Sports Talk on the way in this morning.
So he was making the
exact same stuff.
Because I was thinking, if you're going to just pull someone out of the building, Mark Messier was there. Maybe he's a guy you ask.
Anybody
you know?
That knows hockey. I mean, he said, I don't know the rules. But
that's
it
funny.
Sure looked bad. That's what he said.
Well, all right.
It's like, okay, good.
I can do that.
Good for you. Good work. All right. Let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean Show, shall we?
I believe that the harder you you work, the more you put into it, you're more likely to get out of it, right?
I don't think I agree with that. Dana White's on the program today.
The president.
Talking about UFC 176. Very excited about that. Dr. Drew will be here. We have a brand new internet roundup. We have, do we have Ice Cube?
We do have Ice Cube.
We have Ice Cube on the show today talking about 22 Jump Street. And we have a little breakfast with a little man by the name of Jack White.
Yeah!
Coming up this morning, we'll take a break and come back with the showbiz. 6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 5:53.
A little too much cough syrup there, you know what I'm saying? A little less cough syrup, I think, for you, Chris.
How dare you? Oh, him.
Yeah, not you. Well, you too.
With we have an exciting half hour coming up here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Two former members of the great rap group NWA will be here. Ice Cube and Adam Carolla joining us right at the top of the hour. First, though, Ralph's here with the showbiz beat. What's going on?
Well, first of all, I want to give people a heads up. There's still a couple tickets left for Hollywood Babylon tomorrow night at the Improv on Melrose. Come on out and join me and Kevin Smith. We have a good time. We think you will, too, because, well, I don't remember most of the shows, but people tell me it's very entertaining because I'm loaded. You can go to improv.com and click on Hollywood to get your tickets for tomorrow night, 10 p.m. And you're all lucky I'm here. That's all I got to say.
Why?
Because I should be in Metropolis. Where I should be, because I didn't even realize today is the first day of the annual Superman celebration. Today's Superman Day. It's Superman Day.
Right.
In Metropolis, Illinois, they celebrate Superman.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
From today all the way through the weekend, it's Superman weekend, and they have parades and high-powered celebrity guests and games and a Superman
Museum. Let's back up. High-powered celebrity guests.
Yes.
Give me some names.
Aaron Smolinski. You know Aaron.
I don't think so.
He was the kid who played Baby Superman in the first Superman movie.
Baby Superman.
Yes. We've seen his penis. His penis.
That's who you're starting with?
He lifts the truck off of Pa Kent when he lands on Earth in that rocket ship.
Okay, so that guy.
He's there.
All right.
Valerie Perrine. She'll be there.
You're right. It is star-studded.
It is star-studded. Dean Cain. Mother effing Dean Cain's going to be
okay,
there.
Okay, there you
Superman
go.
Superman himself.
Maybe lead with that one next time.
I'm just saying. Anyway, I'm looking for you. You know, that's the event that our buddy Scott Cranford used to be the Superman at.
That's right. Remember.
Very exciting times. All right, let's give some congratulations to our boy Jason Schwartzman, friend of the show, a good man. He and his wife Brady just had their second daughter. He joins 2-year-old big sister Marlo. So congratulations to the Schwartzmans. We are overjoyed for you guys. And you may be listening, for all I know. They usually do listen, but now they have feedings and stuff going on.
Oh, right. It's very possible they're
very
up right
possible
now.
They're right now giving a 5 o'clock feeding. So if that's the case, we love you guys. Best of luck.
It is funny, though, when you think about anyone who's born into the Coppola family tree. Every baby that's born has about a 50-50 chance of winning an Academy Award.
Very true. I think they give you a little mini one at the
unbelievable.
At the hospital. They put one right in your diaper. Casey Kasem update. This is just getting so sad.
Oh, no. It's getting worse.
Well,
I thought he got
the family fighting is still going on. That's sort of standard operational procedure. But he has gotten help, Kevin. He's in the hospital, but his health is very, very poor. Mm-hmm. And a Los Angeles judge reversed his decision from earlier this week, ruling that giving Casey food and water at this point would actually be detrimental to his health. He would be in more pain taking in fluids and food than he would be.
That sounds like they might be writing him off.
Well, that's the thing. They are now, his daughter Carrie has now entered him into end-of-life hospice care.
Yeah. Mm.
And so the judge has decided that Carrie can continue to remain as her dad's temporary conservator. Of course, his lunatic wife, Jean, when she's not throwing raw hamburger meat at people, has a team of lawyers who said, this is cruel and inhumane. It's just wrong. Casey's being starved and cut off from medicine.
Hmm.
Well, that's not the case. And Casey himself has written instructions that should he ever be suffering, especially from mental impairment, he does not want his life prolonged with forced feedings or anything like that. So it's just a sad, sad way for a life to end. And then with all this insanity with the family surrounding it.
This is like Bean's 9/11.
Losing like Casey Kasem.
Oh,
much
yeah,
as he loves
yeah.
Casey Kasem in his countdowns.
He's my,
he's
my hero, man. Radio god Casey Kasem.
He is. So he'll be meeting Snuggles here within a few days, it sounds like.
Yep.
Snuggles the fabric softener bear?
The dog.
No, the dog. The little, remember the...
Oh, it's
the dog.
Phone.
Yeah,
he's
right.
Don on the phone.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, we didn't get your obscure radio.
Well, we played the tape of him
well,
freaking out about
the
dead
dog
dedication.
We just know it is dead dog. We didn't
played
know what the dog's
times.
Name was.
It was Snuggles.
We didn't read the dog's tags as we were listening
to
the radio.
There was a death in our family. He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of. Let's go start again.
Okay.
From coming out of the record. Play the record, okay? Please. See, when you come out of those up-tempo goddamn numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions. And then you got to go into somebody dying. You know, they do this to me all the time. I don't know what the hell they do it for, but goddamn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand it.
Sorry,
is Don on the phone?
Exactly.
Yes. Don is on the phone. Rob Kardashian's issues may be worse than anyone has imagined. It may not just be the beer mug diet that he's on that is causing his health issues. His mother, Kris Jenner, God bless her, she's always there for her son. She's gone to the press and saying he's struggling with drugs.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's nice of her.
She's a doll.
That's
she
sweet.
Is just a sweetheart. They had a special last night on NBC about the O.J. Simpson murders.
Okay.
Because it's the 20th anniversary of that crime. And, of course, she was front and center just being interviewed up the wazoo for the... Nicole was my best friend, and we vacationed with O.J. I mean, she somehow made it all about her.
Sure.
And I was thinking, really, O.J., you killed the wrong woman. You had a chance there. You could
absolutely.
You had your choice. You had a wide variety of choices in that situation. How the world would have been different if O.J. had done the right thing instead of the wrong thing.
Isn't it weird to think, and I know you're making a joke, Ralph, but if he killed Kris Jenner instead, we wouldn't have the famous Kardashian family today.
I know.
We would avoid all of it.
It's Hitler in 39, man.
It is.
If you had a time machine, you'd go back and take somebody out. What would you do? We could have averted this cultural world war we're in the middle of now.
And OJ would say, "What? Why Kris Jenner? What's wrong with her?" We were like, "You have no idea what's coming.
Have to
you
trust
just
us.
Don't know."
We'd She's be like Wolverine in Days, X-Men Days of Future Past. It's like, yep. You need to go back in the past, OJ, and do the right thing. But why? I'm the juice. You wouldn't understand. Anyway, Kris Jenner says that Rob is does nothing but smoke weed, watch movies, eat and pop hardcore prescription pills like Norco, Percocet, and Xanax. That's what he does. Ah, Mother of the Year, Kris Jenner, everybody.
She really is.
Let's hear it. Nuts. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. George H.W. Bush is 90 years old today. He's 41. He's president, the 41st president of the United States.
Okay. He's before Clinton.
Yes, right. Okay. He is 90 years old today. My good buddy, actor Jason Mewes of Jay and Silent Bob fame. He celebrates his 40th birthday today. Singer Robin is 35 years old. Adriana Lima celebrates her 33rd birthday. And actor Dave Franco of the Franco family, James's brother, 29 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Straight out of Compton. It's a crazy brother named Ice Cube. From the stupid dope gang with an attitude. That beats, fool. It's a full-time jack move. Chili Chill, yo, homie, make the track move. Hey, what can I tell her? What can I tell her? How you like me now? Today I didn't even have to use my AK. I gotta say it was a good day. You get no love, man. I thought you knew it. Fool, you know how we do it. Bow down when I come to your town. Bow down when I'm west with blame. Cause it's Friday. Oh yeah, throw your neighborhood in the air. If you don't care, they call me the Don Dada. Pop a collar, drop a dollar. If you hear me, you can holler. Even Rockwaller. Get your club on.
We are never, ever, ever cool enough to talk to Ice Cube, but we never turned down an opportunity to do so. He is back on the show and back in theaters this weekend with a new film called 22 Jump Street. Please welcome the Cube back to the show. Hello, sir. How are you?
Yeah, yeah. What's up with y'all? How y'all feeling?
We are good.
Always a pleasure to have you on. We talked to you not long ago with Ride Along, a big hit. Now you're back with 22 Jump Street. I bet you guys knew when you were making the first one that this was going to be a franchise. It was so much fun, right?
Well, we was having fun. You know, the directors was new to live actors. You know, they had directed Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, and that was it. So they didn't really, you know, we kind of knew they were good, but we wasn't sure. But we was liking what we were seeing. But when they cut it together, and I saw Rob Riggle head turn into an ice cream cone, I was like, oh, that was crazy.
That was the
Might
moment
doing
you
another one.
That was the moment you knew.
That's the moment I knew. Sequel. Oh, this is gonna make money.
your writer directors Phil and Chris, they did the Lego movie too, right?
Yeah, they did the Lego movie.
They
was editing the Lego movie while they were shooting 22 Jump Street. You know, so these dudes are freaks.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
Now, do you prefer fat Jonah Hill or skinny Jonah Hill in person?
I like the fat Jonah Hill. You know,
I do too.
Jonah Hill is, you know, he's arrogant. You know what I mean? He feels he's sexy.
Right.
He feels he's Oscar worthy. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
The fat Jonah Hill is funny.
That's right. Now, let me ask you this, Keith, because you've done so many different kinds of movies over your almost 20-year movie career now. Why is it you think people don't consider comic actors to be as great an actor as dramatic actors? I mean, you and Jonah and Channing have all done great serious work, but this comedy is just as hard to do. I don't understand why it doesn't get the same respect.
Well, you know, Hollywood wants to take itself serious as a serious art, you know, art form. And I think Hollywood has been fighting to have films looked at as art for so long that
right.
Anything that's not, you know, hoity-toity, you know, British accent, you know what I'm saying, done in the, historian times is not art to them. So
yeah.
The comedic actors, you know, kind of get the shaft. But who cares, man? They can keep those awards. They can keep all those accolades. It's all about box office, man. It's
yeah.
all about the people coming and showing you that they love you, they love your movies, they support you, and that you're one of their favorite actors. And, you know, they can keep their statues.
How do you handle the, hey, we sure love the first one, would like more of that, and then when the second one comes out, people go, hey, that was too much like the first one. You sort of want the same, but you sort of don't. How do you walk that line?
I think what you do is you got to be committed to do a whole new movie that stands on its own. You know, even if you can borrow off the first one, people think they want to see that, but when they see it, they think you're lazy.
Right.
You know, you just are stealing money. So it's better to just go try to do another movie that sits on its own. And you shouldn't have to see the first one to love the second one. That's my philosophy.
Do you like just acting more than wearing two or three other hats?
No, I like producing, you know.
You do.
That's where the action is, you know. That's, you know, you can get in there and you can really, really have your finger on all aspects of the movie. You can. I ain't gonna say control because that's kind of like a bad word. I'm not a control freak. Trust me.
Right.
But it's really about being able to have say in wardrobe, marketing, set design, actors, director, who we gonna do this and that. So having a hand in all that is where I like to be. I don't like to just act because you just show up, somebody tell you, here's what we want you to do, here's what we want you to do, here's what we want you to do.
You feel like you're putting too much in their hands, that you're not in control enough at all, I imagine.
Yes, too much.
Yeah.
Because most people that put these movies together without me, you know, they flop. So, you know, you should always put your movie together with Ice Cube.
There you go.
By the way, what kind of moron ever says no to Ice Cube? He looks at you with that face. I imagine most people just crumble. We're talking about the movie 22 Jump Street in theaters this weekend. I want to ask you, because I know we get a little bit more Captain Dixon than we did in the first movie. Is there any reveal, Cube, on what makes Captain Dixon so angry? Like, what happened to him that makes him hate the world the way he does?
He don't hate the world. He just hates his job right now.
Yeah, his job, okay.
Jump Street job, they got him, they done moved him from the Korean church to the Vietnamese church across the street. You know what I'm saying? He's dealing with dudes that look about 50, trying to play undercover, who's not focused, man. And if you had Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum in front of you with all the stuff they be trying to pull, man, you'd be pissed off too.
Yeah, that's true.
Let me ask you about one more thing before you go, and it's also on the movie tip. The NWA movie looks like it is happening, and is this true that this week you have confirmed who is playing you in the movie on the story of that group?
Well, Universal, you know, wants to do this big announcement, but man, I got to say it. You
All
know
right.
what I mean? I got to let it out the bag that, yeah, my son will be playing Ice Cube in the new NWA movie. And it's not nepotism involved. Now, what it is it's the perfect man for the job. He was born to play this role, and now he got it. Voila.
That's going to be out in 2015, and I'm so happy that you guys are making a movie about that, because there are so many even fans of NWA's music, young people who have discovered it long after the fact, who have no idea what that time period was like in the 80s. They have no idea, the 80s, early 90s, what it was like for you guys coming up and how much you changed the game. It's going to be a real education for people to learn that part of history.
No doubt. You know, just think of Los Angeles and all the, you know, everything that was happening in Los Angeles from 1985 to 1995, and that is the explosion of NWA.
Yeah.
You know, and everything that was going on from, you know, I mean, you got to go back to, you know, the LAPD, Daryl Gates. You know, they had this thing called the Batarang where they would come knock your house down, you know, with a tank. You had Reaganomics, you had crack cocaine. AIDS was new on the scene. Man, it's just juicy gang banging. It's just,
well, you make it sound like good times, Cube.
man, you know, it was glorious times. But it was a time. This is the time in history that forged NWA.
Absolutely. Well, I can't wait for that film. That's next year. But this weekend, it's all about 22 Jump Street. Jonah Hill, Channing Tatum, Nick Offerman is back. And, of course, the great Ice Cube as Captain Dixon. Always a pleasure to have you on the Kevin and Bean Show, man. We really enjoyed it.
Oh, man. man. I love coming on, man. Anytime I'll be back, man. Just, you know, get at me.
All right. Thank you. 20 minutes away from the start of Breakfast with Jack White, ladies and gentlemen, here on the Kevin DeBee Show. Boy, we've been wanting to do this for a long time. Very, very excited. That is coming up. Live performances from Jack. We asked some questions. The audience asked some questions down at the down the hall in the Red Bull sound space. Got some shocking news for you, Kevin.
What's that?
Morrissey is sad.
Aww.
And the shocking news is
Morrissey announces the close down of his present U.S. tour with, quote, unimaginable sorrow. Apparently he has a respiratory infection. He caught it in Miami, he says, from his opening act. He thought he was on the road to recovery, but then just got sicker and ended up just canceling the whole rest of his tour. So,
by the way, that stuff is going around, and it seems like it can hold on for months.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. It does. But Morrissey has a long history of canceling shows for lots of different reasons.
Yeah,
I'm not saying he's not sick.
20-25%
Yeah, exactly.
If you, that he plans.
If you buy a ticket to Morrissey to see him in concert, you ought to have a backup plan for that night just in case. But we wanted to find out more about this. It's pointless for us to speculate when we know Moz himself, and we've got Morrissey on the phone with us right now on the Kevin DeBee Show on K-Rock. Hello, Morrissey. Welcome back, sir. How are you?
I'm unmanageably sorrowful. I am really sad. And
That sounds bad.
Yeah, maybe you're doing the right thing by canceling the future dates of your tour. How long have you had that?
I've had it for about 4 years now.
4 years?
4 years? That's a long time to have a chest cold.
Or a month.
Yeah.
It just seems like 4 years, maybe.
The report I read said about a month.
Yeah.
So this is terrible, not only for your fans who want to come and throw roses at your feet, but you're out there on the road, you know, working on promoting your new album that comes out in July. So this is just bad timing all around.
I'd be fine if it wasn't for that bitch Christine Young.
She's the one you think gave you the cold?
My opening act.
Mm-hmm.
She's a bitch, and she gave me a cold. Cancer.
Oh, that's a little harsh.
But Morrissey,
how do you know exactly?
She should have died a painful death because she gave me the sniffles.
But let me ask you, how do you know who gave you the sniffles? I mean, maybe she had it, maybe other people had it, maybe you shook someone's hand. It's easy to get passed around.
She said she had a horrendous cold when she was opening for me.
Uh-huh.
And I...
Hello? You okay? You fall down?
Hello?
You all right?
Are you all right, Morrissey?
Oh, I just passed out.
Oh, no.
Horrible cold.
Yeah.
And I just...
Oh, poor guy. He's really got it bad this morning.
Oh, hello?
Hi.
Hi.
It's still us.
I'm going to cancel all my shows.
Well, that sounds like maybe you should.
Yeah, you sound rough, dude.
I feel icky. And my nose is running. Someone give me a tissue.
Morrissey, I don't mean any disrespect in asking you this question, but when was the last time you were actually happy?
Let me think. When was Jimmy Carter president?
That was back in the 70s.
Yeah, I wasn't happy then either. But I say...
Oh, wow. Poor guy. Hello?
I'm back.
Oh, hi.
Wow, I've never passed out from a cold. That's weird.
Oh, well, you're not as sensitive as I am,
well,
are you?
Well, it's very possible.
Yeah. I just...
Oh, wow. That's not a... Poor guy. That's not a cold.
Yeah, that sounds like something more serious than that. Morrissey.
I don't remember eating that.
Breakfast with Jack White is next on the world-famous K-Rock.
Now, you have to you get a vinyl version of this to listen to it while you watch it on the video. You have to sync it up or something.
I think we're just going to put it on the radio.
You have to put it at 72 1/4 speeds on your turntable.
We checked with Jack if it was okay if just this one time if we just put it on the radio, and he said yes, but only on AM.
Oh,
so,
okay,
unfortunately, you have to switch over to 1150 or something.
And it's in Morse code, right? The whole thing's in Morse
code? It's in Morse code, yeah.
Obviously, that's Morse code.
Okay.
Right. Nothing more advanced than that. Anyway, Breakfast with Jack White for the Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock coming up. First, though, Ralph's got another look at the Showbiz Beat here on the Kevin DeBee Show for a Thursday morning.
I want to remind folks, you want to come out and see me and Kevin Smith, we are putting Hollywood Babylon back on stage tomorrow night at 10 p.m. at the Improv on Melrose. Come on down and come see us. We have a good time. You can get your tickets at improv.com.
No.
Click on Hollywood.
No.
And then you can get your tickets for tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Me and Smith.
No!
Back together on the boards, as they say, with our hilarious...
What's the point of this story?
...brand of showbiz debauchery.
Nope.
Speaking of tickets, how would you like to go to Magic Mountain...
Yay!
...for a year for nothing?
Yay!
Ah, the kids love Magic Mountain.
They do.
Well, I've got a pair of seasons.
Although those kids are whores. They seem to like everything.
They do. Except
they love free
except
stuff.
Except for Hollywood Babylon, oddly enough. A pair of season passes to Six Flags Magic Mountain. You get to go for a year. You and a friend can ride Batman the Ride and Colossus backwards. Only a few days for that. Only until June 15th. But it's just a great place to spend your summer and your winter and your fall. You got the whole year's worth of Magic Mountain. If you call me right now, 1-800-520-1067. Caller number six, since it's Six Flags Magic Mountain, will win a pair of season passes to one of the bestest places on the planet. Bill Murray is becoming something else.
What does that mean?
I think he was at one time a very funny sketch comedian on Saturday Night Live, and then he became one of the biggest movie stars in the world, one of our favorite comic actors. And then he became a serious and thoughtful actor, turning in amazing performances in different types of projects. Then he became sort of a recluse, and he became a mythical character. He would just disappear. No one could get in touch with him. He had no agent and no manager. And now he has morphed into Loki, the prankster god of yore, where he just appears out of the mist to entertain people in small groups around the planet.
I love that.
He's become an imp. He's become a trans-dimensional figure who slips in between realities back and forth just to bring moments of fleeting pleasure to one or two people, only to disappear back into the ether.
And none of the stories sound believable or true, and you can tell people that you hung out with Bill Murray and no one will believe you, but then sometimes there are pictures. It's just, he is a mystery.
Well, most recently, he showed up at that guy's bachelor party, remember?
That's right.
Dispensing words of wisdom for the bachelors as well as the groom-to-be, and he showed up and gave an eloquent speech on the top of his head, and then he hoisted the groom onto his shoulders, and then everyone turned around and he was gone again. He just dissipated into mist. Well, once again,
he's the best magician of our time.
He is, and he's just this bringer of mirth and joy wherever he goes. Now he's struck again in Charleston, South Carolina. There was a young couple, Eric Rogers and Ashley Donald, a lovely-looking young couple, who were shooting their engagement photos. They were about to be wed, and the photographer is looking through his viewfinder. Raheel Goba is his name, and he's shooting their engagement photos, and he's looking at them. They seem distracted, and they're looking at each other and looking away and laughing and giggling, and then they try to straighten up, and he's trying to take pictures here, and he can't imagine what it is that is distracting the young couple. So he looks up from his camera to see Bill Murray off to the side with his shirt pulled up to his chest, his belly out, slapping his belly, trying to make the couple laugh while they were posing for their photograph. Raheel, the photographer, asked Bill if he wanted to be in the photo. Sure I would, said Bill. He walked into frame, posed there with the couple. This guy fired up a couple shots. Boom. Off
gone.
He went. He was gone.
Like a unicorn.
Back into the mist. Like Brigadoon, the lovely mythical town of old. He would just appear and then disappear. Gone. Just gone.
Do we ever find out what Bill Murray is doing in all of these random cities across the country, by the way?
Well, they're all big golf cities so far. The ones Charleston especially has got some great courses down there. So I'm guessing he is a huge golf fan. He's a fanatic. I'm guessing he's playing at these courses around these towns in the United States and then just in between holes just sort of bringing joy to the world.
You know, most celebrities...
Two or three people at a time.
Most celebrities that are, you know, his stature... spend a lot of time trying to get out of the spotlight and not be.
He's never in the spotlight. Right. That's the thing. He never gets into a spotlight.
I guess what I'm saying is he tries to avoid.
Yeah. He doesn't do a lot of press things. He won't do a lot of television interviews. The spotlight he eschews for some reason. But small groups of regular Americans, he seems to
revel in that. Just showing up and being funny and making someone's moment and then disappearing again.
It's funny because if you were having like the 30th anniversary screening of Ghostbusters, you could never get Bill Murray to come to that and speak to a theater. But he would gladly walk into a stranger's karaoke party.
Yeah, that's true. I love that about him.
He's becoming like Santa Claus. Sort of a mythical figure that we believe exists, but you can only really have fleeting reports to base it
it's
on.
Like Bigfoot. You don't get a clear shot of him.
It's wonderful madness.
Back off, man. I'm a scientist.
Google glasses, right? You with me?
Right.
I'm so with you.
Google glass.
Listen to me.
Oh, technology.
Take it easy. No, I'm with you on I hate them.
Oh, how can you hate the Google glass?
I just do.
I thought you loved them too much. You hate them too much now.
I do. I mean, I've never tried them, so
well,
I mean,
then
I
shut the F up.
But I'm inclined to hate them, as I believe Ralph is probably at this point, based on
not.
Little or no information.
I'm all about the Google
really?
Glass.
Really? I hate them.
How can you hate something that is what you've been aiming for your whole life, which is just to disappear into the internet and become at one with technology?
I think it's just it's too new and too scary and too raw.
Scary?
I think it will develop to a point where I will be comfortable with it and then we'll probably enjoy it. I'm just not there yet. I'm not ready for that yet. I'm dipping my toes in. I'm not ready to dive into the deep end.
I'm very ready for this Breakfast with Jack White to be over and for you to go back to your little home and get out of our lives.
How can you be scared of Google Glass and yet wear the glasses that you wear and not be scared of those? How are you not scared of the Mr. Magoo glasses?
What is going on with Google Glasses that's new, Ralph?
No. I'm not done with this yet. Because Google Glass is the ultimate in access to the interwebs. You put glasses on, and then you just look in the corner of your eye, and there you have your screen. You have access at will.
That is,
I understand.
That is everything Bean wants.
That's all you've ever said you wanted, and now it's here, and I'm dipping toes, but I'm scared. What?
He's a contrarian. You know that, Ralph.
Here's the problem about the Google Glass, though, is that it is potentially infringing on other people's privacy. Because if you wear the Google Glass, you can record at will without the other person's knowledge.
Oh, video.
Anything
oh.
that you're,
oh, no kidding.
You're pointing your Google
That's why a lot of places are trying to ban them already, even before they're widely used.
Well, here's my story about places banning them before they're widely used.
Oh. Sorry.
How are people reacting to the Google Glasses, Ralph?
Thank you, Kevin. Alamo Drafthouse is the first U.S. theater chain to ban Google Glass. You can't wear them in their auditoriums because, naturally, you could record what you're watching up on the screen, which would open up a whole new can of worms when it comes to piracy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They said you can wear the computerized eyewear into the building, but after you buy your tickets and your food, you got to take them off or else they will be throwing you out. And Alamo don't play, by the way. They're for real. If you text, you get slapped, and they roll you out into the alley, and they beat you with a can of the lid of a garbage can. Google Glass also has been banned at restaurants, strip clubs, as you can imagine.
Yeah,
the girls
sure.
don't want you shooting video of them. Casinos, can't have them there.
Yeah.
So this is the first movie theater chain, however, that's going to do it. So,
and I've also seen people have worn a Google Glass into an establishment and have been beaten up for it, too, Ralph. I mean, people are very uncomfortable with this technology.
Who's been beaten up? Who's wearing them?
Early adopters. You know, they put them up for sale on Amazon a few months ago. A limited number that you could buy, and people are wearing them and getting beat up. It's just it's kind of a rough launch of this product. It'll get there.
You're going to some rough trade gay bars, Bean. I don't know who's beating you up there, but maybe that's why Bean's afraid of it.
He's been beaten up.
He's been beaten up by wearing
them. Look at the glasses he has now.
He should be beat up for those.
Right.
No one's touched him.
No one's doing the right thing there.
Today's celebrity birthdays. George H.W. Bush is 90 years old today. Jason Mewes, my good buddy, Jay and Silent Bob, fame, of course, from Clerks and Mallrats and Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. He is 40 years old. Singer Robin's 35. Adriana Lima celebrates her 33rd birthday. And actor Dave Franco is 29. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show.
Let's get ready for breakfast! Kevin and Bean's Breakfast with Jack White.
K-Rock.
We are in the Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock. Kevin and Bean Show. Exciting day for us today, Kevin.
Why is that?
Because we've been wanting to do this breakfast forever.
Right,
today
breakfast.
Is the day, ladies and gentlemen. Jack White is here. Jack White. That is the sharpest outfit anyone has ever worn inside the building here at K-Rock. Seriously, you look like you're in The Time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hello, everybody. How are you? Well, welcome, Jack. Happy record release week. How's it been for you this week?
It's been a wild. It's whirlwind. We're playing in three shows in L.A. right now, and I think three shows today right now, and we were in New York, I think, 30 hours ago, so I'll sleep at the end of the week, I think.
Yeah, next week you're going to just try and catch up?
It's feeling good. It feels good. Everyone's so energetic right now. It's a good time of the year, isn't it?
I know this record, you spent a little bit more time on than you have on some of your past records. Does it screw with your head at some point when you do a song and then months go by and it's still not out, and do you still like it and you got to revisit it, and how's it all work together as an album? Is it quite a process when you spend a year doing an album to get everything lined up the way you want it before you finally release it?
Yeah, I think the first time I felt that was when I was in a band called The White Stripes, and we did an album called White Blood Cells, and that came out, and we went in and recorded our next album, Elephant, and really fast, in 10 days. But Blood Cells from before that was still selling so well, they wouldn't let us put it out. So that sat in the can for a year, and we were sitting there waiting to put it out for over a year. And then but the song still felt good a year later on that one. We got lucky with that one. But I could imagine, some things you get so far away from. You know, so hard for me to listen to a record I made like 3 years ago. It's very hard. You have to like let some time go by.
How long did it take for this one, for Lazaretto?
This one took 2.5 days.
So that is a long time for you.
It is.
Usually you do 40 songs in that amount of time. You're slow. I never heard the word Lazaretto before until I was recently reading a book on the history of the Black Plague. And that word...
Oh, you're the other guy.
That word came up. And my understanding from the way it was presented in the book was that's where they sent all the people with the plague to die, basically. It was like a hospice or a quarantine or something like that. Is that the meaning of the word as you understand it? And why did you name the album that?
I guess it has a couple of meanings. One of them was a quarantine island. That's the word. That's the definition I had heard years ago, is a quarantine island. So that I just had written it down. I thought, I really like the sound of that word and the look of that word. I like the way it looks even. I don't know. I just sort of, you try to collect those words here and there when you're a songwriter and you work on things like that. So, at the end, I was going to call the album Wit of the Staircase, but I thought it was too complicated, too much of a mouthful to say that name. That was a French phrase about when you think of the perfect retort at the end of an argument as you're walking up the stairs. The Wit of the Staircase, but Lazaretto is a little easier to say.
How many notes do you have of just interesting...
Well, there's only like 12 on the
interesting
piano.
Interesting-looking words?
Yeah. How many notes are on a piano?
No, not on the piano. How many notes have you taken of words that you find interesting or that look cool? I've not heard of that.
Yeah, I don't really keep a journal anymore, but I write them down or I'll look them up and I'll save it. If it's a computer, I'll save that or I'll write it down on a sheet of paper when we're working on songs. And then, but if it's a phrase, I have to sing it and play a different instrument, a piano or a guitar, and try to memorize it that way, or I'll forget it. I usually do forget half of it.
Do you write it on napkins at a restaurant or whatever?
Sometimes. But a better thing is to hum it. Give it a melody, and then I'll usually remember it.
This is the voice of Jack White here on the Kevin and Bean Show. It's Breakfast with Jack White in the Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock. I'm fascinated with so many things about the way you work, Jack, particularly songwriting. One of the things I've heard you say in the past is you are not a guy who can write an album if it's not due for a year. You're a guy who needs a deadline. You're a guy who, I got studio time booked tomorrow, I better write a song. So when you sit down with that kind of pressure, what gets you going? I mean, is it a blank piece of paper, or do you sit down and start tooling around on an instrument, or how do you even get started to write a number?
If you stick yourself in a corner and you have to... I like to stick myself in a corner where I have to fight my way out. Sometimes in the studio, I'll even tell the band I have a song, and they think that I have a song, but I don't have one.
You lie to them.
Yeah. But if I told them I don't have a song, then their minds will be, oh, okay, and then they might even think to help write it, you know. But if you don't want that scenario if you're a songwriter in certain cases, because I'm trying to get in a corner where I'll have to figure out my way out of this problem. And that's a technique I've used a few times.
You ever find yourself in that corner? You put yourself there and you can't figure out a way out?
Yeah, I did that the other day, and it turned out that it was just a closet in my house.
Oh.
So, Is there a muse? Is there some sort of inspiration, some sort of divine touch? Where does it come from, do you think? Or does that take the magic out of it if you try to guess?
You know, I think the assumption is when you really present things to people and it looks a certain way, it has a presentation that, you know, it's all about control or being a control freak or things, words like that. But you really, I think it's a bad place to be when you're writing a song, is to feel as if you are in control of the song. I mean, it's very ridiculous and egotistical to think you are actually the one in control of what's happening. I mean, maybe some people can get an ego buzz from that, like I wrote this song, but I never feel that way. I always feel like you're just an antenna and you let God in the room and let something happen. And you put all the pieces in the place and then it starts to happen on your own. You're just sort of a conduit or a director or a vessel or something like that. And then things start to happen. But if you ever start to think this is song happened because I controlled it and I made it happen, it's not really what's going on there.
See? Let's hear it for being humble. Jack White is here, Breakfast With on the Kevin Bean Show. We'll take a quick break. Mr. White is going to be performing for us this morning, and we'll include your questions when we return right after this on K-Rock.
You mean like a big breakfast machine?
Kevin and Bean's Breakfast with Jack White, world famous K-Rock. K-Rock.
It is, I don't know, Breakfast with Jack White.
Yeah! Love it. You should never be asked to play rock and roll before noon, by the way, Jack. So thank you in advance for what you're about to do. We very much appreciate you being here. The new album, Lazaretto, is out this week, by the way. Everybody buy it already? Now, Jack, are you personally offended if every one of these people did not buy it on vinyl? Is that an insult to you? I feel like it might be.
I bought it on iTunes this morning. So yeah.
I bought it on CD form, and I was like, I don't know if Jack's going to be happy about this.
So that's cool. You don't care how we buy it as long as we buy it, right?
No, I think all formats are cool. I mean, it's all about where and when, you know? I think we said some phrase a year ago, something like, digital in the car, vinyl in the bedroom, you know? Just a twist on some other phrase, I think.
You grew up buying vinyl records?
I did, yeah, and cassettes too, but vinyl records. Remember kind when cassettes used to have that long plastic thing that was about 14 inches long, so you couldn't steal it?
That was great for the environment, that was.
Really good, really good.
What kind of a record collector were you? Did you buy a lot of records? Were they handed down from your parents? How did it work for you as a kid?
My brothers and sisters had a pretty big record collection, and my parents did too. They were into a lot of, Nat King Cole and 1940s and 50s music, and my brothers were into rock and roll and country music, and so there was a lot of records around the house. You know, all the Beatles and Rolling Stones records were easily available in the house, but I didn't get into punk records and things until I was a teenager on my own.
Tell us about recording an album. I think you just did with Neil Young and in what looks like a phone booth. Tell us about that. Like, how did you come up with the idea? How did you sell it to Neil Young?
That's a long story, but I'll try to make it fast. I was, for about 10, 15 years, I've been looking for an old recording booth. I read about them, heard about them, and I always thought when I was younger I was going to find one. We went on a tour somewhere. Oh, we'll see one in Australia or in Europe or something. I've never saw one ever, even one that was broken. And I went down this a lot of blind paths. I went to empty warehouses. A guy said he had one, and it wasn't. It was a pinball machine or something, So anyways, I finally found one through these coin op machine collectors, and I bought it, and we refurbished it for about a year and a half, and we got it going. And when we debuted it on Record Store Day at Third Man Records, that day, Neil Young just happened to come by through Nashville, and he has this electric Lincoln car. He's making an electric car. He's going on a tour of America in it. And he just stopped by, and it was nice to see him. We both have electric cars. I have a Tesla, and we were going to talk to each other about that in his film. And when he was there, I was telling him about the booth, and a kid came in, and there was a curtain, and a kid came in and recorded one of Neil's songs in the booth. And when a kid walked out, Neil peeked his head out.
That's weird.
Freaked him out. And then he just said, I got to come back and record in here. And a couple months later, he called me and goes, hey, I want to come and do my new album in the booth. Well, I said, I'm not going to stop you.
help me understand, in an age when everybody is trying to make advances, help me understand the beauty of analog in the old days.
because I'm not trying to be a smartass.
No,
like,
for sure.
I don't get
that. Yeah, it's like a sort of a thing. If you see a black and white photograph, it takes on an air of romance because you have to concentrate and imagine so much of it that the materials that aren't present there. It forces your brain to sort of get involved in the scenario. If you listen to a 1920s, you know, like a Al Jolson record or a Charlie Patton record, I could see it turning off a lot of people. It's very crackly and you can't hear what they're saying half the time. But if you can get your mind set into that idea, it becomes incredibly romantic. So this is a night almost like how you would hear if Neil Young recorded under the same conditions as Jimmy Rogers or young Hank Williams. This is how they would have recorded it. And in a sense, that record, you're getting as close as you possibly can to Neil Young because he did, you know, he wrote a letter to his mom in heaven in the booth. That's the first track of the record. I've never seen something so personal from him. So if you can get your mind past the ideas, you can get very even deeper into something, I think.
Yeah, you kind of strip away a lot of the things that stand between you and the artist with all the technology and everything. I see what you're saying. Let's go to Dave, the King of Mexico, our producer, who's here on the Kevin and Bean Show with Breakfast with Jack White. Dave, you got our first question from the audience. Who's it going to be? All
right. I'm here with Jackie. Jackie, go ahead.
Hi. Okay, so Jack, you mentioned in previous interviews that some of the lyrics on the new album come from various one-act plays that you wrote when you were 19. Mm-hmm. Would you ever consider writing a play or a movie for yourself to star in?
Yeah, there's one I was working on called The Jack White Story. That
I don't think you're right for that.
It's in pre-production now. It's about half done. A little less than half done. No, I would like to do that to answer your question, Jackie. I would love to do that. I've done that a bunch, and I would like to work more on films and plays in the next few years, actually, when I get tired of this music. Hoo-ha. Just kidding.
Dave, let's do one more for right now.
Oh, this is Alex. Alex, go ahead.
All right, so I know that you've collaborated with a lot of different artists. So are there any artists that you would want to collaborate with that you haven't already worked with before, and why?
Well, there's some people that, you know, I was hoping to meet and I never got to because they passed on, like Captain Beefheart and George Jones and people like that. I never got to see live and never got to meet them. And that's too bad. Nowadays, we've been kind of, in the last year, I've kind of worked with a couple of people. We did a live album with Willie Nelson at Third Man Records, and that was someone I really wanted to work with. And there's a lot of every week there's a couple of new people coming up that are doing new things. And the good thing about Third Man Records is they come and we get to do things like that. We get to work on a Blues Series record, a single with them, or a live album for them. But I can't think of another name right now other than those people. Sorry.
You worked a little with Jay-Z, Kanye.
Yeah,
you were talking about.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Yeah. Third Man recording artist Jack White is here. Who wants to hear a little live music this morning on the Kevin and Bean Show? Play it, Jack!
This song is called Just One Drink.
right there is how it's done. Breakfast with Jack White here on the Kevin and Bean Show. We'll be right back with more.
Would you like some breakfast?
Kevin and Bean's Breakfast with Jack White,
the world famous K-Rock.
It is Breakfast with Jack White. We are back. Jack, we're so happy to have you today. We really appreciate you coming in a small room. I don't know what it holds, 200 people or something like that. Do you enjoy playing little places like this? Do you like playing bigger places? Which are...
Yeah, man.
You can actually make eye contact.
I'm exhausted.
Well, we didn't give you much room on this stage, I will tell you that. This is about as, this must take you back 15 years to play a room this small.
Yeah. I like it, man. This is like the stage at Third Man. It's about this size. These are the best kind of stages to be in. When you're pushed together as a band, my studio is like that too. It's very small and gets everyone to work together. If you get into a larger spaces and people are working in a studio, the bass player is like 20 feet away. You're not really in the same mindset, but if you're all locked together, I think it's a better environment.
On this tour that you're doing for Lazaretto, are you still have the two different backing bands? The one all male, one all female?
No, I don't have that this time because the schedules have been so crazy with all the musicians. They all have their own things going on. And
we didn't get a chance to ask you at the time that you were doing that how that happened. Like, what was there a difference in energy between which bands you picked that night? How did you decide which band you were going to go on with that night?
When I recorded my last record, Blunderbuss, it was just a recording technique I had one day. So how about tomorrow? It's just all female musicians. Let's see and record the exact same song we did today with all the male musicians. Let's just see if something happens. I don't know. Maybe it means nothing. Maybe it's not. What if we had all 75-year-old musicians tomorrow? What would that do?
7-year-olds.
Yes.
Death.
Exactly. So recording the same song with different people, I never had really done that while you're working on an album. So I thought I'd try that. And it was really interesting. And it has nothing to do with sexes or the group as a whole. It starts to come down to individual players are just so different from each other that you get different intonations. But, the mood changes. If you have a room full of, gorilla guys in a room and you bring one girl in who's just standing there holding a coffee or something and watching, it changes everybody's attitude in the room. If I bring my mom in and have her sit down while we're playing, we're all going to act differently too, So it's you can do all kinds of tricks to make everybody in the room change their attitude to the song.
And you believe a lot in chemistry with a band. I mean, you guys improv as you go. Your musicians are talented enough to just watch what you're doing and keep up, right? And you follow them sometimes. I mean, it's kind of like jazz in a way where you put different people together in a room and it's not going to go the same way every time.
Yeah, jazz, is that like a new website or something?
Right, yeah. Jazz.com.
Okay.
Check it out. Breakfast with Jack White. We go back to the crowd now. Dave, the King of Mexico, is out there with whom?
I'm here with the familiar face, our buddy Stryker.
Stryker!
Hey, everybody.
K-Rock Zone.
I love Lazaretto, so I want to geek out about that song for a minute. My question is this. It goes like dun, 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 dun. And that's like kind of goes through the entire song. It's like the backbone of the whole operation.
Could we hear some more of it, please?
Nope. That's all I do. But that part of the song, like sometimes I get laser focused and I just hear that when I listen to the song, except like at 2 minutes it slows down. I would just like to know the inception of that song and that beat that goes all the way through. Like, I feel like that could be on a hip hop artist that did it in the 80s or some like psychedelic thing. How did that song come about musically for you?
It was an experiment. I heard about a songwriter writing where you listen to other music and think about it for a second and then erase that from your mind and then write the song immediately right then. And the song I had used to get me in a different spot was Cha-Cha-Cha by MC Light. I don't know if you know this song. And so I was listening to Cha-Cha-Cha and La Band who listened to it. Okay, listen to it. Now everybody forget about it. And now here's the bass line. And I told the bass player, these are the notes, blah, 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 and play that. And then so we're sort of in the same, neighborhood is in the same vibe because you just got out of listening to that intensely, but you're not copying it. You're not trying to copy it or rip it off or anything like that. You're just trying to be in that moment. And some of that, I heard about other songwriters, you actually play along with a song, play along with an old song. The whole band plays along and then you take the other song away and you continue playing, and then you just change chords as you go on. That's another technique. It's some folk process people use. So that's how I got to Lazaretto.
It feels like you're making life as difficult as possible on yourself. Like you're really pushing yourself in every way you can figure out.
Well, if somebody says, today, like, I really like that song, like he just said. I mean, now I can say to myself, I'm proud of that. Because if I had said, we ripped off some other thing, and engineer worked on it on a computer for 2 weeks, and I was in Jamaica the whole time. I don't even. Yeah. But thanks. Yeah. You know, I want to feel like if you told me, I love that song. I know how it was done, so now I can appreciate it more.
Let's hear Lazaretto right now. What do you guys think? Title song from the new album, available everywhere now. Jack White.
Breakfast with Jack White,
the world famous K.
You'll get breakfast in 10 minutes.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show.
Breakfast with Jack White,
the world famous K Rock.
We're back. It is Breakfast with Jack White. Who I think it's safe to say is about to tear this space down.
Yes, I think so. I think so.
By the way, you can see this. I appreciate everyone that's listening to this on the radio right now, but you can see this performance. It's streaming for 24 hours from the Red Bull Soundspace at krock.com, so you can watch it over and over and over again to your little heart's content. Jack, a couple more things, and then we'll get back to some more questions here in the crowd. Seven Nation Army is a song that has become so much bigger than you. 100 years from now, they'll still be playing it at college championship games. Tell me when you realized that that song had made the jump to some sort of a worldwide consciousness.
It had become a, a, a soccer anthem at some point years ago in Europe, and a friend of mine had went on his honeymoon and said on the beach there was a ship in the bay. And the people on the ship were chanting Seven Nation Army. The passengers on the ship were chanting it. It was a cruise ship. And he was sitting on the beach, and he had to write to me a letter and say, I can't believe what just happened. That this song, it was just a few years ago. And then that year, the president of Italy, because Italy won the World Cup, the president of Italy chanted the song from a balcony in Rome.
What the hell? That's never happened to me.
Yeah. So those were a couple of moments where I thought, I think maybe the song is connecting with people.
Are you surprised of all songs that one became the thing?
Yeah, very.
You don't
strange.
Know when you write it.
No, not at all. It's like, I remember my friend was with me when I wrote it at a sound check in Australia, and it was. I asked him, "What do you think of this riff?" And he was just like, "It's okay." And and further, I was trying to write a song with no chorus, to drive you in and hook you in as much as you can, but not have a chorus in the song. The song has no chorus. It's very hard to have a popular song that way. And also, the third thing I was crazy about is when we were releasing that album, the record labels, nobody wanted to put that out as a single. It was on nobody's mind. But it's funny to think that way. It wasn't an obvious choice.
Rolling Stone magazine did a reader poll not long ago about the best Jack White songs. People could pick from anything. Their number one was Ball and Biscuit. Wow. That was the fans' favorite, overwhelmingly. Does that surprise you? And what's your favorite?
What's my favorite? That is surprising. That's very, very surprising. That's such a. I've always have a big fondness for that song, though. And my favorite, I really don't know. I have a few that I really am fond of. This song I wrote called "Cut Like a Buffalo" with a Dead Rider. That's one of my favorites. And "Same Boy You've Always Known" is a White Stripes song I really like a lot. There's a few that really connect with me. Sometimes I don't play them for months. I think we've only played that one time on this whole tour. Those songs, but. Save them for a certain moment.
That's right. All right, let's do one more question from the crowd. Dave, who's up next, please?
It's Andrew.
Up, Jack, dude? I have your luggage.
It'd be so great if you said that.
Right? It's right here.
He is wearing a vest and a tie.
So I just need a validation tag, please.
No problem, yeah.
My question is a little bit existential, I guess. What song do you think played the moment you were born, and what song would you like played at your funeral?
I have the songs I'd like to play at my funeral written down somewhere. I told somebody about it in an envelope, but I can't remember exactly all. But I can't tell you. It would be too personal to tell you. But the song that I was playing when I was born was probably a Roger Miller song, because my parents are big Roger Miller fans. And they love King of the Road and things like that. Kansas City Star. He was a big thing with my parents. It was probably Roger Miller.
Thank you, sir. Good question. Jack White is here. Breakfast With, by the way, we've got one more segment coming up. And how about another song before we go to break? What do you think? Yeah! Here's Jack.
This is a song we're going to play now from our new record. It's called Temporary Ground. Return on home with answers, a sad existence glue is all in your back to school, ring my bell. Brown shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Walk with me, Susie Lee, through the park, by the tree. We will rest upon the ground and look at all the books we found. Safely walk to school without a sound. Safely walk to school without a sound. School all by ourselves, vested on our uniforms from chasing all the ants and worms. We clean up and now it's time to learn. We clean up and now it's time to learn. Numbers. Numbers, letters, learn to spell. Nouns and books, show and tell. Playtime, we will throw the ball and back to class, through the hall. Teacher marks, I hide against the wall. Teacher marks, I hide against the wall. And we don't notice any time pass. We don't notice anything.
Breakfast with Jack White, world famous K-Rock.
Let's get ready for breakfast!
Kevin and Bean's Breakfast with Jack White, K-Rock.
We are back here on the Kevin and Bean Show in the Red Bull Sound Space. Breakfast with Jack White, ladies and gentlemen. Got time for one more segment with Jack. By the way, Jack, was there anything you wanted to talk about today that we haven't asked you about? Anything on your mind?
What have you been doing?
Just being excited about this. Just wait for this. We're so happy to. How do you like Nashville, by the way? I know you've been there a number of years now.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
grew up in Detroit, lived there your whole life, and then all of a sudden Nashville. Big change?
Yeah, it's wild. I loved it. I moved there and I didn't know anybody. And now there's a huge family of people there. And there's so many bands that are there now that are cooking. And it's, you know, there's the Etts and Kings of Leon and Black Keys. There's so many people who live in the town and that are totally different from the country world, because before when I got there, it was just country. That was great for me. It felt really comfortable for me.
Why did you go there?
Because it felt comfortable, so I could do what I needed to do in a town that was sort of maybe more focused toward the commercial side of country music. Sort of feel like I could just kind of do my own thing and not have to be bothered. I also don't feel that comfortable in big cities to work in, because I feel sort of claustrophobic. So it's just a right-sized town. And now it's just blossomed. The huge family that we have at Third Man Records is blossomed. So many people have moved there and that I know from Detroit and from London. And we started off with two people at Third Man Records. Now we have, I think, 30 people working.
Are you going to have to leave it behind again and move to someplace smaller?
Yep. Your house.
Speaking of Third Man, as a guy who was a recording artist for a long time before you started running your own record label, has that changed your opinion of how the business works?
Yeah, you can't help but be changed all the time about what's going on. If you involve yourself in actually the physical record making and the actual process of the presentation of it, You think about every single moment of it, you know, what picture is underneath the CD card, and what kind of logo's in the corner, and how it's actually made at the factory. All those things, you start to involve yourself in. It was really beautiful, because the whole product becomes a piece of art that's you and a group of people made together from scratch, and you're working in little components all the way up, instead of just sort of only doing music. I mean, some people like to do that, only sing or only write or only perform. And I think my brain's been mechanical from when I was younger, and about being in the mechanical process. So I get more out of that, I guess.
As a business, though, is it able to be profitable? Can you make a living running a record label in 2014?
Yeah, shockingly, it does. I mean, everything we do at Third Man, every single idea seems to be a bad idea. I don't know. It's just like, I mean, for making money, it seems like a bad idea, but it's something that we want to do, and it accidentally somehow works out. I think like what we just did with the new album, someone was holding up the Ultra LP. We put so much work and effort into that, and time and money into it. For something that really doesn't make it worth more money to us, or you know, we don't charge twice as much for it or anything like that. I guess it's just something we want to exist, and somehow it connects with people. I think if you do something that you are passionate about, other people will come to it and they'll want to share it instead of you going out and trying to sell it to them. If you're concentrating on making something beautiful, I think some people will just kind of wander over and see what's going on.
If you're talented, which you are.
Well, thank you. I don't know what to say.
I love that you're keeping the art in the music business, though. I mean, that's really great. You know what I mean? All right, we're almost out of time here. How about another song from Jack? Red Bull Sound Space. Breakfast with Jack White, the Kevin and Bean Show here on K-Rock.
A breakfast with Jack White. How great was this? How great was Jack to come to this morning?
The album is called Lazaretto. It is available everywhere. Everyone listening, you must, it's not a request, it's an order. You must immediately buy, download, whatever you have to do, get yourself some Lazaretto. And Jack, you're going to be out on tour this summer. You're going to be playing America this time around. It's going to be fun. Great to see you.
Thank you very much.
And super fun.
I want to say thank you to everybody who came here today. It's really nice.
Thank you. All the best to you, my friend. Jack White, one more time.
bar. I took a sweet little time about it.
Well done, guys.
Thank you to Jack White for coming in. How awesome is that?
Boy, that was fun. Cool. Man, that was fun. And as we mentioned during the Breakfast With, you can see the whole thing. It is streaming on krock.com right now and will for about another 23 hours or something like that if you want to watch the performance with Jack and his great, great band. And let me just throw this message out for people who are listening to the program via podcast around the world. We're not allowed to put the songs on the podcast, of course, because of music rights issues. But if you love Jack White like we do, go to the website, go to krock.com and watch it. And that way you can enjoy the songs in their full, glorious way.
All right, good tip.
All right.
Let's talk about lube.
All right.
Well, that's
how could this thing get even better?
That's an abrupt transition, Kevin. Here's the headline.
Well, hey, that Jack White, what's up? Let's talk about lube.
Here's the headline: marijuana infused sex lube is a real thing.
Is this good for me or bad for me?
For you, it's probably bad.
Probably bad.
Let me tell you what it says here.
I think I'm gonna die.
It's called Floria, Lisa. Mm-hmm. And here's what the man behind it says. Women report a sense of embodiment, a sense of dropping into a more full relationship to sexual sensations and sensations around the body. As you can imagine, as that builds up to orgasm, if orgasm is part of your experience, then that can lead to intensification and a more full body experience. Now, I know from personal experience that women can't have orgasms, so this guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Sure.
But they're saying that there's something in the marijuana. You know, we've heard about all these mysterious things that are in marijuana. In THC, they're saying that it does make for a more intense orgasm. So,
or at least you're high if you don't.
Right, exactly, right.
Yeah, but don't you have to ingest it?
Well, let's find out, because we have too many questions
right,
about this.
That's my point.
But it is edible, Lisa, so I think there is some benefit to getting some of it in your mouth, too. But I don't want to guess.
Nice try, guys.
I don't want to guess. Let's go to entrepreneur Matthew Gerson, who joins us on the phone. He is the genius behind Floria. Matthew, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show, sir. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, sir?
Oh, we're good. We're doing fine, yeah. So congratulations on your Floria, I guess it's called. A lot of people are talking about it, and a lot of people have questions.
Yes, they do, and it's becoming very popular.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are really going to enjoy it.
Okay. What about sex made the light bulb go off over your head where you said, you know what sex needs is pot?
Well, you know, it wasn't so much about sex. It was about my girlfriend at the time who would only bone me when she was high.
Oh, I see.
So I figured this way, you know, that it would be more of an encouragement for her to have sex with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If I was able to, you know, promise her getting high as well.
Sure. I see. Okay. Yeah. So if you use this marijuana-infused oil, if you use that as a sexual lubricant, some of what's in the pot just gets absorbed into the, I guess, both people's bodies that come in contact with the skin, and they both get a little bit of a high if they have sex with it?
Well, not so much with the fellas, because, you know, the skin is in a permeable membrane for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
Sounds like you're not that familiar with how sex works.
I actually am not, no.
Or lady parts. But for a woman, sex often ends up being involved internally for a woman.
Okay, right. Okay.
And so the membranes of the vaginal area are able to absorb things through the vaginal area, through the membrane.
Okay, I got you.
And so
what are you laughing at, Kevin?
Kevin, be an adult.
You keep saying vaginal areas. Well, we're talking about it.
That's where the lady has sex sometimes.
Right, I know.
In the vaginal area.
I know, my bad.
So the THC contained therein actually is able to penetrate through the permeable membranes inside the vaginal area.
Vaginal area, right, yeah.
And she does enjoy a certain sense of euphoria as well as having, you know, heightened sexual experience.
Okay. So, Mr. Gerson, what's this going to cost me if I want to buy a bottle of euphoria?
It's just a low, low price of $88 an ounce.
$88 an ounce?
Wow. How long does an ounce last me?
Well, it depends on how big your vaginal area is.
Well, for years then, obviously.
Some ladies can use an eyedropper. Some ladies need a paint roller.
Really? A paint roller?
Yeah, you get in there with a paint roller and a drop cloth, and you just coat the vaginal.
That is sexy.
I'm sorry, what are you saying?
Sounds like a lot of fun.
The vaginal area.
Right.
Just slather it on there, and then everyone's able to enjoy their time, you know, their intimate time.
Right. Okay.
And,
all right.
So the as I mentioned, the cannabis contained within Floria is able to penetrate the permeable membranes, and then women have experienced all kinds of positive side effects from overall sexual enlightenment all the way through to full orgasms that have been, you know, greatly intensified by this.
Okay.
I find it hard to trust your opinion on sex. How long did you have that girlfriend?
We were dating for well over a week or two.
Oh.
A week or two.
But my real passion is finding, uses for hemp and for cannabis in everyday life to enhance our lives.
I see.
I have a lot of experimental experience in that area, and this is the most successful I've had. I have tried for the gentleman. There's been anal pot suppositories.
Oh no!
Yeah. I discovered.
Wait, can we no longer smoke it?
I discovered that one time when I was pulled over by this cop.
Right.
And I had to spend some time in county jail, and I had to dispose of my stash at the time.
Right. Sure, think fast, yeah.
And I found that introducing the pot anally was also a successful way to really have a good time. So that was pretty good. I still contend, by the way, that was a racial profiling situation when he pulled me over.
Racial?
Yeah. I was driving a black VW bus at the time. I don't think he liked blacks. Or, you know, you can just do what I do, which is take some cannabis and just slather it all over my Dr. Scholl's insoles and when I put my moccasins on, and I just absorb the pot right through the bottom of my feet.
Right. Maybe you need a little less pot.
So you want to buy some of this stuff? It's only $80 an ounce.
Seems like a lot.
Or I'll give you half an ounce for 40.
Yeah, all right,
that's
here we
good.
Go.
That's good. I'll take that. Linkin Park is also going to be playing in the Red Bull Sound Space. Sean Vail from Glendora just won tickets. Your chance to win coming up.
Nice. Get more information and another chance to win at KROQ.com. The president of the UFC, Dana White, in about 20 minutes. Ralph's got the showbiz beat, too. But first, Dr. Drew Pinsky from Weeknights on KROQ with Loveline. And then, of course, on HLN every night at 6. And Drew, you told Dave you were butthurt that we didn't see your show last night, but my friend, the Kings are in the Stanley Cup final. We had other television plans last night.
Just how dare you.
So you spent some time talking about your new favorite person, this cannibal from Tennessee, one of the most shocking stories that we've seen in a year that's been packed full of them.
I know. I have to share with the audience how we got to this story this
Please.
Morning. What?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, because we originally were going to talk about vaccine therapy and the measles outbreaks, and that's a very worthy topic, and I got to mention it. Please, people, I grab every vaccine my children can possibly get their hands on and give it to them. Vaccine therapies were the most significant advancement in medical science, above and beyond sanitation. These are the two major advances. Everything else is sort of on the fringes, on the periphery.
Right, but what about eating people?
And then I said, you know, Dave, I'm surprised Bean didn't bring up the cannibal. I mean, measles, I mean, it's a worthy topic. We've got to talk about this. There's no link with autism. It's worthy of bringing this up again. Then this outbreak going on, and it's a deadly illness. And the Dave's like, what, cannibals? And he sends that in to you guys. And Bean goes, oh, yeah, the guy in Tennessee. Oh, yeah, I do want to cover that. Okay, let's get
but
to
Dr.
it.
But Dr. Drew, this guy, he meets a woman at a liquor store, right, takes her home. Does he have sex with her and then kill her, or does he just kill her?
Not in the report. And, again, Bean, use your imagination. She's actually a very attractive woman. She was a woman that he met at a liquor store. Unfortunately, she's actually a mother of two. She was sort of down and out, alcoholic, perfect victim for him. I imagine he did. And this guy, the crazy thing about this story is this guy had all these Facebook posts about his Satan worship and speculating about what flesh. He was quipping about what vegetarians must taste like. Are they like soy? These crazy sorts of posts. Nobody does anything. Isn't he funny? Isn't he funny? Look, we can't judge. We can't judge somebody in their belief system. Pictures of him carrying machetes, and lo and behold, he met this girl at the liquor store and cut off her head, hands, and feet, and ate her.
Oh! Now, Dr. Drew, you're outraged, and I understand why, but what can we do?
You know, and we spent a lot of time talking about that on my show last night. It's like, should Facebook, you know, Facebook, if somebody gets a side boob shot, they're taken off Facebook. But if somebody's standing with a machete speculating about what human flesh tastes like, well, that's okay. That's just a point of view. I don't know. Should Facebook just take them down? Should they refer them for help? Should they call the local authorities? Should any of us who read these sorts of things notify? And if we notify somebody, whom do we notify? It's sort of an evolution right now. It's just, you know, social media is a new medium, and we all have to kind of learn how to interpret what we're reading and figure out what to do with these posts. I mean, nobody did anything with the YouTube posts of the kids that shot up Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
Right. We have to start looking at these things seriously and judging, using our judgment and going, hey, I think this person needs help or is in trouble or is dangerous, and referring.
Isn't there just flat out too much of Facebook, too much of Twitter, too much of everything to really pay attention to?
It's a great, yes, yes. I'm just saying, it's almost like we have to become citizens of social media and figure out how to do this in a healthy way. And I don't have all the answers. I really don't. It's something that's going to evolve.
I guess what I would hope in the situation of Gregory Hale, I guess the man in Tennessee whose, you know, neighbors say he's a Satan worshiper. I guess what I would hope is that when he puts something up on his Facebook page like this, I hug the people I hate so I know how big to dig the hole in my backyard. I guess what I'm hoping is that people that actually know him will check in with him and go, dude, what's up? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. But again, they'd have to read his Facebook post in order to say, who knows if he shares that kind of nonsense, you know, over the breakfast table. But yes, it is incumbent upon those of us that know people. Listen, the woman in Las Vegas that was the neighbor that knew the couple that shot the policeman knew that they said they were planning some sort of revolution, knew that they had violent tendencies. And we're so pro-social that we push away from taking actions that can be unpleasant. We just don't like to hassle people. We don't believe that – we literally go into kind of a denial. We don't believe that that really means something, but we have to become better at this. We have to start – because it's happening a lot now.
Yeah. And let me add to that not only the denial that we all go through, but I'm sure you saw the story, Drew, that was so big over on Slate.com this week about the controversy about what to do if you see kids in a hot car and how long you should wait and do you confront the parent and how do you know if they're really in danger. And a lot of people are just, I don't want to get involved. I don't want an uncomfortable situation, right?
There's something called the bystander effect, which is the less people around take action, the less likely you are to. And when do you take a mallet out and bash the window in? Forget call the cops. I think we have to have, I don't want to overwhelm the system, but I think we need to have a better trust, maybe a better relationship with the people whose responsibility it is to intervene on these things. And they've not been doing a great job either, by the way. I mean, let's remind ourselves that the guy at UCSB was investigated by the police, and they didn't quite finish their job up there. But they, too, have to get better at really sussing these things out. And it's hard. I'm not saying it's easy. It is hard. But, I last 3 weeks on this show, I've been saying the same thing. Is that, hey, everybody, judgment. Judgment matters. Use your judgment. Use your instincts and speak up. See something, say something.
Do you think that Gregory Scott Hale, who's 37 and lives with his mom, is tied in any way to Beer Mug, who also lives with his mom?
Hey. There's a direct relationship.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Let me ask you one more question about this story, and that is because you're a student of the brain, and you've spent a lot of your time evaluating mental illnesses and whatnot. Is there any connective tissue between people who choose to be cannibals? Is there anything specific that's going on in their lives that makes them go that route?
Not that I could speculate, but not that I think is accurate. It's often, prolonged illnesses as a child or extreme physical pain or seeing extreme violent phenomena, but nothing directly. In fact, a lot of it may have a genetic element to it. Psychopathy, which is these, people that become serial killers have a brain disorder, and yes, there are things that happen in their childhood that sort of put rocket fuel behind that brain disorder, but ultimately it's a disordered brain. It does not have treatment. It's not anything we could do anything about except remove these people from the rest of us. So whether you call it evil or sin or psychopathy, it's all the same thing. Let's not argue about what it is. If you want to use the word evil, fantastic. In my world, psychopathy helps us at least try to understand what it is and what can be done about it and how to identify it. If you call it evil, it gets a little bit muddy, but this guy is evil.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, our policy on this show is never, ever, ever kill hot chicks, so I'm very disappointed in the choice here.
And Beer Mug is evil, too, let's be
fair. That's accurate as well.
You can listen to Loveline with Dr. Drew and his good friend Mike Catherwood on KROQ Sunday through Thursday nights at 10. And please watch Dr. Drew on call on HLN Monday through Fridays at 6, as long as the Kings aren't playing. Doc, have a great week, man. Thanks for the time.
Thanks. 106.7 KROQ is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 8:54.
Ralph Garman?
Yes?
Is that a question? Thanks for giving us some of your time last hour for a little extra minutes with Jack White.
But, well, it's more than worth it when you got a guy like that playing like that.
Super fun. Good super stuff. Fun. Again, you can see the whole breakfast at KROQ.com if you want to watch it from his performance this morning in the Red Bull Sound Space. But you did stand down last hour. We appreciate
it.
But you're back with the Showbiz Beat right now.
I did, but my time was well spent. I was in the lab whipping up some new stories here.
Sweet.
Stuff that you need to know about. Stuff that your life will be changed by. starting with, first and foremost, my new Hitler. My new world's worst enemy, my new reason for living.
So we're past Bieber, we're past Taylor Swift. You've got a new target. No Chelsea Handler anymore.
Bieber and Swift are street muggers compared to this criminal.
Wow.
This is DEFCON 5.
Is that
4-1, depending on which one is more
which
eminent.
Scale you're on, right? Yeah.
I am calling the Garmy to raise up arms against my new ultimate foe.
And that foe is
Grumpy Cat the movie. Grumpy Cat the movie.
Wow.
Maybe you didn't hear me. Grumpy Cat the movie.
Nothing, that can't be a thing.
Nothing bugs Ralph more than Grumpy Cat in the entire world.
Hollywood Reporter says a made-for-TV movie.
Yes.
It's not even the worst. If they'd called it Grumpy Cat the movie, that would be bad enough. But it's called Grumpy Cat's Worst Christmas Ever. It's going to be a Christmas TV movie that will be on for the holiday season.
Every holiday season.
Oh, bro. I'm sure they'll roll it out every year. Grumpy's Worst Christmas Ever.
So good.
Oh, I bet this cat, he's all grumpy about Christmas. And, maybe he doesn't get the toy mouse he wants.
So with all the holiday magic going on and the bright-eyed little children looking forward to Santa Claus visit, Grumpy Cat still doesn't get into the spirit of the season, Ralph?
Grumpy Cat's a pet store cat who can somehow communicate with a 12-year-old girl. He's going to be so grumpy and tell her all his grumpy problems. And I hope she feeds him a big dish of antifreeze. That's what Grumpy Cat gets for Christmas.
So good.
Come on. This isn't what Jesus intended when he was born.
Yeah.
Grumpy
there
Cat
are
Christmas movie.
100 scripts on writers' desks in this town that are as good as Pulp Fiction that will never get made. Yet Grumpy Cat the movie is happening.
Grumpy Cat's going to happen.
That's a terrible idea.
Here's a movie idea I can get behind, however. This is a movie from the director John Carney. You may know his previous work, the musical Once. Did you ever see Once, the movie?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Great movie.
Great film. Great Broadway musical as well.
Mm-hmm.
He is developing a new film called Sing Street, which takes place in Dublin, Ireland in the 1980s when U2 was just coming up. The music scene in Dublin in the 80s. Apparently, Bono and The Edge are also on board writing new songs for this movie.
That's cool. Fantastic.
That sounds awesome.
It's no Grumpy Cat, but it
no,
sounds...
it isn't. But I hope Bono can have telepathic communications with a 12-year-old girl in a pet store. Bono and Edge also are coming aboard as technical advisors to make sure everything is right about the city during that time period. So I think it could be awesome. More music news. Drug dealers in New York City are using the names of pop stars as code for the drugs that they sell. This was found out by the NYPD during something called Operation Yard Work, which went on for 10 months. They were able to break up the code that drug dealers would put up on places like Craigslist and on the street and things like that, so you wouldn't have to come out and say, hey, where can I buy some coke? They would have a code name. So you would say, I'm interested in getting some Christina Aguilera. That's cocaine. That was cocaine in the code.
Okay.
Britney Spears was crack. That seems appropriate. Christina's cocaine. That makes Britney Spears the cheaper, more trashy version served with crack cocaine. Cops busted up the drug use. 340 different counts for an indictment were announced yesterday. So those guys were busy.
I love doing drugs.
Well, who doesn't?
T-Boss! T-Boss! Miss Boss! Miss Boss over here!
And good news, Kevin.
Yes, Ralph.
Of course, you know your World Cup is starting.
Today.
How's your little World Cup? Is that going to be good for you?
It is.
Opening ceremonies happening today. Good news is Jennifer Lopez will be part of the opening ceremonies. She wasn't supposed to be in there.
What?
Word was last week she couldn't make it to Brazil to sing We Are One with Pitbull and Claudia Leitte. But yesterday...
Because that song blows.
J-Lo Lopez said she was flying to Sao Paulo just to be there. Opening ceremony kicks off this afternoon, 2 p.m. Eastern time. So what's it make us? 11 o'clock this morning.
Mm-hmm.
First match between Brazil and Croatia kicks off
at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 o'clock.
You're not one of those morons who thinks soccer is football.
No, I'm not. But Kevin is. Now, I'm so surprised because you would think the World Cup opening ceremonies, you know, once they had their schedule locked in, that they would just be wall to wall. You would think just planning-wise, they would have every moment accounted for.
Yeah. Sure.
Jennifer Lopez.
Like years in advance.
Right. The last moment, Jennifer Lopez comes and says, by the way, I can make it. I'm going to catch a plane. I'll be there in Sao Paulo for the opening ceremony. That must be just a source of frustration.
How did she even get on the flight?
Because you would think every flight, Kevin, would be so packed full
right.
of passengers. Uh-huh. Every flight would be sold out.
She's right. Got people from all over the world coming. Biggest sporting event ever.
Not even a seat on that plane for her. But when it comes to planes to Sao Paulo and apparently the opening ceremonies for the FIFA World Cup.
Yes.
There's always room for J-Lo.
Terrible idea.
That was a riddle in a conundrum wrapped by a something there.
How can you love it? It's crap.
Because it's awesome. Today's celebrity birthdays, George Herbert Walker Bush. He used to be our president.
Yes, he did.
He's 90
years
old today.
Did he do it? Did he jump out of the plane? Did that happen yet?
I think they had a hard time attaching the chute to his wheelchair.
Yeah. He said he was going to jump out of a plane on his 90th birthday. I didn't know if it happened.
Well, we've been watching closely, and we haven't seen anything yet.
It's Bushwatch 2014.
You're not really interested in that, are you, Bean?
Oh, what do you think?
But I mean, really.
Kevin, what do you think?
But really, I always think it's interesting when a 90-year-old jumps out of an airplane. Yeah.
You always think it's interesting when a 90-year-old jumps out of an airplane. So how often are you interested? Because how often is that happening?
A couple times a year, you'll see a very old person do something to celebrate a birthday, and I always think that it's a tribute to the human spirit that some people don't just give up and shrivel up and die, that they're still trying to be out there living life. I think it's inspirational.
I wish you would kill yourself.
Okay, you know you're not climbing a mountain, right? Someone's just pushing him out of a perfectly good airplane.
He's just falling.
I
understand.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is...
Another guy pulls the chute. They don't even pull their own chutes at 90. You know that,
what
right?
I'm saying is that most 90-year-olds would be terrified of something like that. And the fact that George H.W. Bush has the balls to say, I'm going to do it, I think it's inspirational. It's nice to see old people live it.
90's the time.
That's true. Yeah.
Worst case scenario. What are you missing out on? A couple weeks?
Right.
What are you going to lose? Now, when a 30-year-old jumps out of an airplane, that's balls. Because a 30-year-old has the rest of his life to look forward to. He's not going to miss out on anything, George Herbert Walker Bush at 90.
So there's nothing at all impressive to you guys about a 90-year-old skydiver.
No, you know, because when he gets to the ground, they put him back in a wheelchair. The best 8 minutes of his life was between the plane and the wheelchair.
Then good for him. Then I'm happy for him. Then he enjoyed himself. Then he had an awesome birthday. I think it's great. Why do you hate joy?
I would like you to jump
you
out of a plane.
You are a grumpy cat, by the way. You ever think about that?
I would like you to jump out of a plane.
Why do you
today,
hate
if
joy,
possible.
Bean says.
I know.
So good.
It's like Hitler asking somebody, why do you want to take over the world? Jason Mewes, my good friend, is 40 years old today. Singer Robin's 35. Adriana Lima is 33. Dave Franco turns 29. And this late-breaking update, our very own pal KTLA's Ally McKay celebrates her birthday as well.
Yay! Wow.
No word on her age yet, but we're having the boys in the lab carbon date her. So
she can't be a day over 23, though.
We'll get that back to you.
I mean, look at her.
I'm thinking 20. Four? I think maybe 24.
Wow.
She's 16 at the most.
All right, let's not get nuts.
All right.
I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
Oh, I've been looking forward to this all morning. Our friend Dana White, the president of the UFC, is on the phone. So much good stuff going on in his sport, including tickets going on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. for UFC 176. Dana, welcome back to the show, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Coming back to Staples Center August 2nd. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, it's been a while. Every time I go out to California, people are asking me when I'm coming back. We're finally doing it, August 2nd. And, you know, we're still putting together the card, but we're going to deliver a good card.
Well, you know, you got Aldo versus Mendez at the top of it, and that's, you know, that's a rematch a lot of people want. And those are two guys who seem to take it personally.
Yeah, this is a big rematch. You know, as far as Aldo goes with it, you know, the guy is... has been undefeated now for something like 8 or 9 years. And Mendez is coming out of, you know, the camp that, you know, T.J. Dillashaw just beat Barao, who is you know,
who was considered unbeatable.
Right.
I think.
Exactly. Yeah, he was going on like 10 years, undefeated, 35 fights in a row, loses to Dillashaw, and they've been competing against Team Alpha Male. I mean, these guys all come from the same team up in Northern California, and then obviously, you know, Aldo and Barão come from the same team down in Brazil. So, always interesting storylines when these guys fight.
Yeah, no kidding.
Absolutely. That's a World Featherweight Championship event. Again, by the way, Saturday, August 2nd at Staples Center. Tickets are going on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. You can get them through staplescenter.com via access.com. Tickets start at just $50, by the way, and there's no UFC event like a live UFC event. That is for sure. Dana, we got you on the line. You know what my first question is going to be when we move past 176, and that's your reaction to Chael Sonnen's retirement announcement last night.
Yeah, you know, Chael's been fun. He's been a fun guy to have around. He's put on some of the biggest fights, you know, we've ever had with him and Anderson Silva. And it's been a good run for him. I knew once this TRT thing went away in Nevada that, you know, it was going to be an issue for the guys that were on TRT. And one of my big things was always, if you're too old to fight and you need that stuff, you should probably retire anyway.
Well, yeah, and he initially kind of fought back a little bit, saying it was out of competition testing, and he almost was like it wasn't fair. But then it sounded like he had second thoughts and kind of agreed that the sport needs to regulate it and that it's time for him to just step aside and live the rest of his life, right?
Well, what happened was when you know, they stopped TRT, they banned it. You know, this was a legal substance. Then they banned it. Well, the guys that were coming down off it, you just don't go cold turkey on the stuff. Then the doctors put you on this stuff like estrogen blockers because – you know, there are side effects to getting off it.
Right.
Men can grow breasts and all kinds of weird things can happen to you when you get off that stuff.
You don't want to do that as a fighter.
Yeah, or as a man, period. You don't want to do that as a man. Then he's also, you know, he's married and he's trying to have a baby, so he was taking fertility drugs. So, again, he said, I should never be in a position where I have to choose either my health or my career. So, well, I don't disagree with him.
He's also going to be working, I think, forever as an analyst. He's so good at that.
He has a bright future in television. Yeah. I mean, this guy gets so many offers every day to do stuff. He's going to be hosting a new reality show that's coming out. So, believe me, he's going to be busy.
Yeah. He's been so good for the sport. He's been, you know, he's been your Muhammad Ali in terms of the mouth that roared throughout the years. And it's been so interesting to watch him go from a guy who was so hated to a guy who ends up, you know, kind of walking away beloved. You know, I mean, it's an amazing career.
Even in Brazil, you know, he was just down in Brazil for the finale down there because he was one of the coaches for the Ultimate Fighter Brazil.
Right. Uh-huh.
And the crowd loved him down there. And you know, he had said a lot of things about Brazilians when he was fighting Anderson Silva.
I would have bet any amount of money against that, and he somehow turned him around.
He did. You know, he was a great coach down there. He really cared about the guys, and, you know, he won them over down in Brazil.
One other general question. What's straw weight? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I mean...
Straw weight. I've heard of fly weight, and it seems like straw weight is new.
Yeah, well, as we continue to... you know, create new weight classes and bring in new fighters. The sport continues to grow. Yeah,
what are you like 65 pounds or something like that? What's the cutoff there, Dana?
Well, if you think about this weekend, the flyweight is 125, so that one would be 115.
Wow. 115. All right, final question for you. This is the voice of our friend Dana White, president of the UFC, on the phone, talking about, among other things, UFC 176. Buy your tickets tomorrow at 10 a.m. when they go on sale for August 2nd at Staples Center. We were talking off-air a little while ago. We're, of course, all getting the fight for this weekend, the flyweight. Those fights get so bloody so fast. It's really tough to watch some of those little guys fight because there's just nothing in their face to absorb those punches.
Well, Demetrius Johnson's fighting this weekend, and he's the champ. Another guy, one of the pound-for-pound best fighters in the world, and is without a doubt the fastest athlete in all of mixed martial arts. You know, this kid gets better every time he fights. And last time he fought, again, from Team Alpha Male, he fought Benavidez, knocked him out in the first round. So the kid has a ton of power, unbelievably fast. Every time he fights, he gets better and more exciting. And he's going against Ali Bagantov, these Russians that are coming out of Russia right now. Tough, durable guys. this guy's undefeated in the UFC, and it should be a very fun fight. And again, a guy who has unbelievable knockout power.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about, because it seems like most of these guys that are in the lighter weights don't really knock people out, and I think that's why they end up bloody so much.
Yeah.
Is that
these two
accurate?
Do. I mean, obviously, if you saw Demetrius' last fight.
Ugh.
You know, that was as vicious a knockout as you'll ever see. And Ali Bagdatov is a hard puncher. You know, it's an interesting fight.
UFC 174, Saturday night. Get that on pay-per-view, but buy your tickets to be there in person at Staples Center on Saturday, August 2nd, as UFC returns to Southern California at Staples Center. Aldo versus Mendez 2. It's going to be great for the World Featherweight Championship. Danny, we know you got to jump on a plane. You are the best. We always appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show. It is 9:36.
Hey, ahead of Ralph's final Showbiz Beat here for a Thursday morning program, how about this? An amazing trip for two to Catalina Island for you. A prize package including a night at the Pavilion Hotel, Catalina Express ride to get to the island, a zip line ride for two, and dinner at the Avalon Grill. You can go to visitcatalinaisland.com for more information, or you can win some tickets right now from the Kevin and Bean Show by being caller 20 at 1-800-520-1067. Good luck. Hey, Ralph, what's going on?
26 miles across the sea. Santa Catalina is waiting for me.
Is that, yeah! is that a song?
Santa Catalina, the island of romance, 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 romance.
So funny that you should sing that, Ralph, because we did one of these giveaways earlier this week, and I says to Muggs, I says, Muggs, when I said that it was 26 miles across the street, that was a reference to a popular song from 1958. And, of course, Kevin rolled his eyes. And I thought no one listening probably even remembers that song.
That's correct.
And then you walk in, you start singing it.
All right, so there's two of you.
We're practically brothers, you and me.
Yes.
We are so much alike. We are just peas in a pod, you and me.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are indeed.
We're beyond besties. We're brothers.
Well, there's only one song about Catalina, so if you're going to think of a song, I mean, it's
look,
the odds
you're
are.
Practically brothers.
That's the one you're going to think
of. Is what
of.
We're saying.
But I support you singing that song. It's an awesome song.
You know, my daughter's middle name is Avalon.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Named after the, of course, the Catalina. They have one side, which is Avalon, and the other side is whatever the hell it is. Not my daughter's middle name.
Buffalo, or whatever it's called.
But my wife's grandmother, her first name was Avalon, also named after that that part of Catalina. So
somebody was conceived there at some point.
It's an important part of our family legacy is Catalina Island. Real quickly, before I get into the showbiz news, I do want to give some mad love to my radio friend, Kevin Ryder.
Why?
Because I just found out this morning that Kevin, ladies and gentlemen, bought his first comic book this
week. Oh, I did,
yeah. Kevin bought his first comic book.
Oh, my God.
I did.
And that comic book was the one I co-authored, called Batman 66 Meets the Green Hornet. And Kevin bought a comic book.
I did.
That's how much Kevin loves me. He bought a comic book simply because I participated in its creation. And I could not be happier, and I appreciate
your
support.
Kids, if we've learned anything today, it's that your parents are right. Comic books really will rot your mind.
No, they won't. They make you wonderful. And Kevin's going to be more wonderful now having read that comic. He hasn't read it yet, don't get me wrong.
I didn't read it.
No,
yet.
No. Well, look,
I mean,
it
come
is
on.
20 pages, Kevin.
With a lot of pictures.
Largely just illustrations with a few word bubbles, so I can see why it would take you. I'm giving you a year till you finally slog through that.
All right.
If you took that with you on the plane to Brazil, I don't know how long that flight is, but do you think you can finish it before you landed, Kevin?
Well, we do have to go through Miami, so I'm guessing not.
Yeah, probably not. But the cover looks loud.
It does. It looks like a very loud issue.
A loud issue.
A comic book.
So much love to Kevin for that. And for Bean, here's my gift to you, Bean. Bushwatch 2014 is over.
Yes, yes.
The former president, the 41st president of the United States, George Herbert Walker Bush, has indeed jumped out of an airplane to celebrate his birthday today. It is official.
I'm cooking!
That's fantastic.
It's official. We have official.
Bean was so excited about that an hour ago.
Hey, did anybody see if he jumped out?
Has anyone heard whether he's jumped or not?
Well, I was concerned because, as you pointed out, he's been in very ill health. He can't really walk anymore. And I was afraid that maybe he was too frail for the jump. But I'm happy to hear that he accomplished it.
You're the only person who cares. Probably his wife doesn't even care.
If he could shift his weight enough just to lean out an open window, He could jump from an airplane. That's all he had to do, really.
Now, I'm impressed.
He's
wish,
tied to another man. Yeah. The other guy could have just run out.
He had a guy on his back.
Right.
Who did all
the tandem jump, right.
Did all the pulling, did all the chute pulling. He just had to fall. If anything, if I know anything about 90-year-olds, I know they know how to fall. I remember that commercial with that lady with the life alert.
Gravity does win.
They can't always get up, but they can always fall.
They can fall.
So,
happy birthday, Mr. President.
All right, Marilyn Monroe, you want to sing something?
I'm cooking!
Ben Affleck has got a little gambling problem, I think. Oh. Isn't getting any better. He was booted out of yet another casino this week.
Really?
Yeah, this time in Windsor, Ontario, Canada. Apparently, Ben is filming Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice in Detroit, and he went across the border to the casino there, hit the card tables.
And they weren't happy with the casting?
Apparently they were not. Said, you're no Batman, get out of our casino. And so he got booted from yet another another casino, the Motor City Casino Hotel. Bystanders say he looked disheveled during his recent trip. Well, his parents were gunned down by heinous criminals, and he's had to commit his life to fighting a war on crime.
That's
so I can
the
see
Batman story. That's
he probably
not,
looks a little rattled.
Ben Affleck in real life.
Was he doing the same thing that got him in trouble in Las Vegas, the sword accounting card thing?
Doesn't say here what the reason was, but I'm guessing that's probably why he was asked to leave. I can't imagine they'd ask him for leave for any other reason. Brings in a
right.
boatload of cash.
Sure.
I'm sure they were happy to have him until he pulled out a calculator or an abacus or something and started working on the
sundial.
Cards. A sundial. It's still good to be Justin Verlander.
Yeah.
Apparently he plays a sport called baseball.
Baseball, right. He's an ace pitcher for the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah. He just celebrated his girlfriend's birthday with her. That girlfriend would be Kate Upton.
All right.
The two celebrated her 22nd birthday together this week. They hit up a tiki bar. At least I think it's tiki. I can't make it out. Maybe a typo. Tiki bar with a few friends last Tuesday. And onlookers say Kate looked beautiful.
Oh, whoa, really?
Really? What a shock.
It's a great update.
Surprised she didn't knock out a few teeth and smear her mascara for the event. She wore a tight red dress and all eyes were on her, they say.
Sure.
And while we're talking about models, Adam Levine has found true love with Bihati Prinsloo, another smoking hot model. And sources tell Us Weekly magazine he tried to make amends with his ex-girlfriends like Nina Agdal and Nina. Some of these models' names are very difficult.
Yeah,
but they were not responsive to his attempts to make amends. Maybe because Nina was shocked to learn that her boyfriend had proposed to Bihati Prinsloo via text message after he refused to take her phone calls last summer. He just stopped answering her phone calls, and the next thing she heard from him, it was in the press that he had proposed to this other girl.
Hmm.
And for some reason, she's not receptive to his olive branches.
She's kind of uptight, I think.
I think she is, too. I think she needs to loosen up a little bit. Maybe a visit to a tiki bar with Kate Upton and Justin Verlander would loosen her up. If you're a Star Trek fan, this has to give you a little starch in your shorts. NASA has a design for a warp drive spaceship.
Wow.
Warp drive. This will allow a spaceship to travel beyond the speed of light.
That is not physically possible.
Right.
Okay.
NASA said, we don't know how to actually to create a warp drive engine.
Well, then I'm coming up with one, too.
But
that's ridiculous.
When we do, it'll fit perfectly into this spaceship that we've designed. Scientist Harold White has designed a prototype of a spaceship that all you need to do to make it a warp drive spaceship is to drop a warp drive engine into it.
When did NASA stop doing actual space stuff?
1977. No word on how a warp core engine would actually ever work, but they do now have a ship designed which will be completely ready to take advantage of that technology once it exists.
I hope they used a lot of our tax dollars to come up with that.
They are naming it the ISS Enterprise. How about that? I get the sense...
Tremble before my encyclopedic knowledge of Star Trek.
Yes, I can sense Harold White is just a big nerd with a checkbook.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who's just sitting there at work saying, I think I'm now going to draw a new Enterprise. And he's eating donuts in the break room there at NASA, and they're letting him stay on. Madness.
Covered in crumbs.
Happy Superman Day, everybody. Superman
Day
today.
Superman
Happy Superman Day.
Day
while we're talking about nerds.
Superman Day.
Today's the kickoff of the National Superman Celebration that happens this time every year in Metropolis, Illinois.
Ralph, we probably don't have time for all the celebrities that are going to be there.
Oh, shh.
Why isn't Ralph Garman there at Superman Days this weekend, by the way?
I didn't know when it was this year.
Okay.
I'm going to go one of these years, though.
Look how excited he is.
I know.
Oh, it's great music. Doesn't make you just want to go to the Fortress of Solitude, which is the name of every bedroom of every comic book geek in America, the Fortress of Solitude. Yeah, it's a big event. They do it every year in Metropolis, Illinois. A star-studded list of celebrity attendees this year.
Star-studded?
Yes.
All right.
So Henry Cavill will be there, obviously, right? Superman.
He apparently had a scheduling issue this year.
So Superman's not there?
Superman is there. Dean Cain will be there.
He was...
All right, he's legitimate. He was
Superman
in... He was a TV...
Lois and Clark.
Right.
The Further Adventures of Superman.
How about Smallville's Tom Welling? Will he be there?
He apparently had another commitment. It's also National Nursing Assistance Day, and I think he's going to be
there.
Celebrating that. Valerie Perrine, who played Miss Tessmacher in the original film, she's going to be there. And the kid who played Baby Superman, who lifted up the truck,
out of the spaceship. He does not count as a celebrity.
He will also be there signing autographs. And we've all seen his penis.
But that could be any person on the street. I mean, he was just a baby. It's not like he did anything,
right? It could be any person on the street, but it's not. It's the same guy who was that baby.
He's not a celebrity.
He's Superman. He's Baby Superman.
But what do you do with a guy like that? You get your picture taken with him, and then what?
Then you say, I met Baby Superman.
Okay.
You don't know, man.
Oh, lame.
Hey, while we're talking,
I go to a lot of lame things, but I am missing the appeal of this weekend.
It's Metropolis. You get to spend Superman Day in Metropolis.
It looks like a sad little group to me.
It does not. And lastly, talking about meeting celebrities, Bill Murray continues on with his just amazing life. He just goes around now just delighting people. That's his new mission.
But in small numbers. He's not doing nothing big.
He was in Charleston, South Carolina. And a wedding photographer was trying to take a picture of a young couple who was posing for their engagement photos. The photographer noticed that the couple looked distracted. They kept looking over his head, looking behind him. They could not focus in on the task at hand of getting their photograph taken. The photographer says, I thought, who the heck is bothering them? I turn around, and it's Bill Murray with his shirt up, belling out, slapping on his belly, trying to make them laugh. Photographer asked Murray if he wanted to be in the photo. Sure I would, said Bill. He went over and posed with the couple. They snapped off a couple pictures, then poof, he was gone. In a cloud of smoke, like the imp that he is, he just disappeared, leaving only the photographic evidence of a very serious-looking Bill Murray in a picture with this young couple taking their engagement photos. Dare I say, the greatest engagement photo ever.
Probably.
How are you going to top that? Your wedding's going to pale in comparison to your engagement photo shoot. Did you guys do that? Did you buy into the engagement photo shoot thing?
Nope.
Yeah, well,
Omar did.
I did too. That's why I was just curious if anybody else did, because it's really an unnecessary step. I believe I can say that with my wife out of the country safely.
You're going to get all the pictures you need at your wedding.
A ton of pictures,
right?
And you have all the pictures you had when you were dating, and all the pictures you have after you're married. There's a lot of pictures of the two of you together. I really didn't see the point of having the official engagement photography shoot,
unless you can hire Bill Murray.
Unless Bill Murray's going to step in. Right. It's all worthwhile.
And forgive me, Ralph, because I don't know much about these photos, but what are they for? Do you send them to people that you're inviting to the wedding so that they know who you are? What do you do?
Initially, they were used for the engagement announcement. Some people would put an engagement announcement in the paper and say, hey,
Paper.
Good news, we got married and we got engaged, and you put a photo in there and it gets listed.
Lame.
But that doesn't even happen anymore. Nobody takes ads out anymore in papers for engagement.
You just put up a cute photo that you already have up on Facebook, right?
Now you shoot a ton of photos showing how you looked when you got engaged. You're on your knee with a ring in your hand and someone takes a picture of you. It's weeks after the fact. You're just walking on a beach somewhere and they take photos of you.
That's pretty pointless.
It was I didn't hate it, but I'm just saying I didn't quite understand the necessity of that step.
At least it was probably cheap.
No, not so much. Professional photographers don't come cheap, but we did get a lot of pictures of us in sweaters on the beach. So we got that going for us.
Name.
Today's celebrity birthdays, as we mentioned, George Herbert Walker Bush, the 41st president. He is 90 years old today. He celebrates his birthday. He fell out of a plane, so congratulations. Actor Jason Mewes, my good friend Jay, through Kevin Smith's Silent Bob, is 40 years old today. Robin turns 35. The singer, not the superhero, not the boy wonder.
Sure.
Adriana Lima is 33. Dave Franco, the actor, is 29. And our pal from KTLA, Allie McKay, also celebrates her birthday. We adore her. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Bean, I think the equipment probably is masking it for the listeners, but my ears are bleeding from that bell.
That was a laugh.
Is there any way you could just move it a little further away?
It's in the same place it's always been.
First of all, it's in the same place it's always been. But second of all, it was for Allie McKay. She deserves a little something extra.
But
a little something extra.
Do my ears need to bleed?
She didn't have to bring out a gong.
Once a year, you can suffer for your art.
All right. Brand new internet roundup tomorrow. We have the movie beat because it's Friday. We have Marion and Sean Wayans tomorrow. We have Beer Mugs interviews on 22 Jump Street red carpet.
Do you have Marion Wayans tomorrow?
What did I say?
Is it Marlon, probably?
Oh, Marlon, I did Wayans? Say Marion, and I wrote Marion.
Is it Marlon and Sean Wayans?
Probably.
All right. I'm not sure. I don't know. I may be wrong. I didn't know there was a Marion Wayans.
Maybe I'm thinking...
There's a lot of Wayans. There could be...